In 1803, something strange washed ashore in a small coastal village in Japan, a vessel unlike anything the villagers had ever seen. It wasn't shaped like any known ship. It bore strange markings, and inside was a mysterious being no one could understand. More than two centuries later, people still argue about what they encountered that day. Was it a foreign castaway? A folktale that grew with each retelling, or something far stranger? Today, we're exploring the mystery of the Utsurobune, Japan's most enduring and unsettling UFO legend. Bom, bom, bom.
History is messy.
Weird, wild, anything but boring.
We're rainy day rabbit holes.
Exploring the unhinged side of history, politics, and culture.
Let's fall down the rabbit hole.
Well, rabbit holers, it's that time of year again. It's UFO season. And once again, my favorite alien of all is back. My very own tall gray, my big brother Jason. Welcome back to the pod, brother.
Thank you for having me back. That's quite the introduction.
I could have referred to you as a tall white.
Well, probably, unfortunately, more accurate, but you know, that's okay.
I mean, you're white, but you're not, you know, that white.
Well, I'm beyond white. I'm like practically translucent pale. So yeah, white pieces of paper. Yeah, that's a tan for me. So that is good. I like it. We're here in the cozy Sasquatch den setup of
my
rainy day rabbit holes, aka Shay's living room with dogs and cats and all kinds of stuff running around. I love it.
If it's a little bit more echoey today than normal, it's because I have 9-foot ceilings and, you know, that's what's happening today.
Yeah, and we're actually sitting in the same room for once to
record.
Yes,
exactly.
Which has only happened one other time. So,
Two other times.
I can't count.
Hey, Jason.
Hey, Shay.
Guess what?
What?
Pay attention to the driving speed. Okay, sorry, guys. That one's not funny for you. It's kind of an inside joke.
Pay attention to the UFO driving speed.
Today, we are going to talk about Japan.
Have you been to Japan, Shay?
I don't know. Have I ever told you about my trip to Japan, Jason?
Which one? Which of the million times have you told me? Shay, just in case you were wondering, I was on at least a couple of those trips with you.
Oh, yeah, that's right. It's kind of like when I'm like, I was talking to my mom.
Yeah, I know your mom. I've actually known your mom longer than you have.
True. So. You were there first.
Yeah, you know.
So, since it is June, officially known as the kickoff to the Summer of Saucers, we're diving into some Japanese UFO lore.
Summer of Saucers.
Yes, officially. But this week's story isn't exactly a UFO. It might actually be a USO.
Ooh, unidentified submerged object.
That's right.
Yeah, I like those.
Better than an unidentified sinking object.
Oh, yeah.
That's just me trying to swim. Next time, we'll get into a mysterious UAP and even a possible close encounter of the third kind.
Wait, hang on. What's a UAP? Is that some sort of onsen I didn't know about?
Unidentified aerial phenomenon.
Oh, okay. Unidentified aerial phenomenon.
But today, we're starting with the ocean and the cat.
All right. The ocean and the cat.
What is he going to do?
I don't know. Who knows what either of them do? They move in mysterious ways, both the ocean and the cat.
Our first story takes us back to our favorite time in history. Yes, the 1800s.
Oh, you've ruined it enough, Shay.
February 22nd, 1803, to be exact. Now, this story was not written down the day it happened. The most detailed version we have comes from 1825, when it was recorded by Kyokute Bakken, also known as Takazawa Bakken, in a publication of gossip, rumors, and strange local tales called Toen Shosetsu, which translates roughly to Tales from the Rabbit Garden.
Which translates roughly to World Weekly News.
I mean, of 1825, sure.
It kind of sounds like it, right?
Yeah.
It sounds like, you know.
Gossip, rumors, and strange local tales.
Ooh, it's Bat Boy.
Uh-huh. Yeah, but Japanese.
Oh, sorry. Battle Boy.
So, Tales from the Rabbit Garden, which is an incredible title, and should immediately tell you that we're not dealing with a dry government shipping log here.
So it's Tales from what?
The Rabbit Garden.
And you are Rainy Day Rabbit Holes?
That's perfect.
That's just synchronicity.
That's perfect. On a cold early spring morning, local fishermen were going about their day, you know, doing fisherman stuff.
You mean like fishing?
Yeah, like fishing. Off a beach called Hara Yadori in the territory of Ogasawara Ichu no Kami, located in what was then Hitachi Province, now part of Ibaraki Prefecture.
Hitachi Province, they produce, you know, really good tape players.
Well.
VCR players and such, right?
I mean, they do. So it's now part of Ibaraki Prefecture. And for a little geographical context, Ibaraki Prefecture sits on Japan's Pacific coast, just northeast of Tokyo, between Chiba Prefecture and Fukushima Prefecture.
Okay.
So Tokyo, Chiba, right?
Right.
Ibaraki, Fukushima.
Okay. Just for everybody who's not sitting in the room with Shay, she's moving her hands upwards each time she says a name.
It's relatively flat, very agricultural, famous for melons, natto, your favorite. Aikido.
Ooh, Aikido.
And the Yushiku Daibutsu, a 120 meter tall bronze Buddha with an elevator inside, which I think we need to go to.
In 1803? That's pretty
good. That wasn't there in 1803.
Oh, okay. I was like, wow. And, man, Japan is way more advanced than I thought. That's pretty crazy.
And of course, home to the Hitachi Corporation.
Oh, it is?
Yes.
Oh, fantastic.
None of that has anything to do with the story.
Oh, okay.
I just wanted to talk about Japan.
Okay. And Buddhas with elevators. All right, you know.
We have been to one great Buddha, but he was sitting down, and he was definitely not 120 meters tall.
No, he was definitely
not. Huge, but...
He was impressive.
So on the next trip we do, Jason, we have to go to one of these, what do they call them again? Daibutsu? Yeah, Daibutsu. So I think that's the name for just like giant Buddha.
Giant Buddha.
Anyway, we've got our fishermen setting out nets or doing whatever fishermen do. There are also villagers on the beach, probably gathering seaweed or shellfish. That's when somebody notices something on the horizon. At first, it looks like a fishing float, something bobbing in the water. Nothing too alarming. The fishermen assume it's just someone's boat that washed away, so a few of them row out, thinking that they can tow it back to shore. But when they get closer, they realize pretty quickly, this is not one of theirs. It's unlike anything they've ever seen. First of all, it's round, shaped like a cauldron or a rice cooking pot or, you know, like an incense pot. The bottom is made of dark wood, reinforced with iron plates. The upper portion appears to be lacquered rosewood, fitted with inset latticed windows like shoji screens, but with actual glass panes. Now, that's in some stories. Some other stories say that in between the lattice windows is stuffed with a kind of paste made from pine gum.
How do they know it was made from pine gum? Were they out, like, tasting it, licking it?
I could only assume.
That seems very odd. So, I mean, don't lick, unknown objects coming out of the ocean is my general rule, but, you know.
Right.
Yes. Each his own. Do your thing.
They say these windows are sealed with a waterproof putty made from pine resin. And here's the important part.
This thing sounds fancy.
Well, and the weird thing is, it looks like a flying saucer. There are artist renditions of this vessel from the 1800s where it looks weirdly like a flying saucer.
So is this like, but it's flying saucers usually, like, even though they're pan-shaped, you know, they're kind of sleek and whatever. This guy seems like dad bod saucer. So.
A little bit. I mean, they have a hard time describing it specifically, but it is kind of round.
It didn't seem like they had a hard time describing it. Sounds like they described it really well. They're like, pine gum paste with a delicate top note of almonds. So, like, that's crazy.
And here's the important part. The fishermen can see inside the vessel.
Oh, really?
And there's someone in there.
Oh, is it Godzilla? Sorry, is it small Godzilla?
Baby Godzilla. That's how he got to Japan. Naturally, because humans are nothing if not curious, they tow the thing back to shore, and they open it, and an otherworldly figure steps out. The being inside is described as a young woman, She is pale, beautiful. Her skin is described as pinkish. Her eyebrows are red. Her hair is long and red, but the ends are white as if dusted with powder or possibly extended with white fur or fabric. She's wearing a long dress made of a smooth material no one recognizes.
Spandex. It's Lady Gaga. It could totally be Lady Gaga.
It's a meat dress.
They would have tasted it. They would have told you.
Exactly. They're just going around licking everything they find on the beach, apparently.
Apparently.
And in her hands, she tightly clasps a small square wooden box. She refuses to let it go. She speaks in a language no one understands, and she cannot understand the Japanese fishermen. Inside the vessel, the villagers find a bottle of water, a few pieces of carpet or bedding, some cake-like food, and a small amount of kneaded or minced meat.
Okay, I'm kind of a bottle of water. Like, what was the label on the bottle? Was it Fiji? Was it Topo Chico? Kind of curious on this one.
Liquid death.
Ooh, liquid death. That'd be amazing.
Both the inside and outside of the vessel are marked with strange characters, symbols that don't resemble Japanese writing, Chinese characters, or anything else the villagers recognize. No one knows what to make of it.
Could have been Shay's handwriting.
Basically, yeah.
No one knows what to make of it. What figures are these? Is this Japanese? I don't know.
Whenever I'm like somewhere where I need to take notes real fast, like I'm at a talk or something like that, I can't even read my own writing at the end of it to know what it was that I meant. Because I'll go back and forth from print to cursive, like in the middle of a word. It's very confusing. Some villagers conclude that she must be a foreign princess, banished for having an affair. According to this theory, the box she clutches contains the severed head of her dead lover.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Why do they immediately, like... They immediately are just like, oh, she had an affair.
Yes. So in this story, written in this book, The Tales from the Rabbit Garden, an old man of the village came up with this huge elaborate story that involved that she had gotten married and then had an affair with a villager and got found out. But because the people of the country where she was from loved her, instead of executing her, they decided to banish her, but they killed her lover, put his head in the box, and pushed her out to sea in this thing, being like, go forth, and if you make it, nice job.
Here's a little bit of head before you go. Hey!
Hey, ba-dum-bum.
Ba-dum-bum. It sounds like a horny old man writing this, quite frankly. You know, let's just be honest about it. So that's, you know, well, considering some of the Japanese manga that wouldn't necessarily be out of the realm of possibility.
So this feels like a bit of a leap, but folklore is nothing if not dramatic. One old man claims he has heard of a similar, in fact, it might be the same man, he had heard of a similar boat washing ashore before, and that boat also contained a severed head, but instead of in a box, it was nailed to a board.
Well, that's slightly different. I mean, you're nailing a head to a board versus like preserving it in a box.
Well, I think putting it in the box probably is more pleasant for the occupant of the boat.
Okay. Well, yeah. It's probably the same amount of unpleasantness for the occupant of the head.
Yes.
You know.
And he suggests that the strange writing resembled markings he once saw on a British ship that arrived from Uraga. So maybe she's British. Or maybe she's Bengali. Or maybe she's an American princess.
Oh, yeah. All the American princesses we have.
Sure, why not? Let's just throw the whole British Empire at this.
Yeah, that all sounds British.
Eventually, the villagers make a decision. They put the woman back in the vessel and push it back out to sea.
They didn't even check to see what was in the box. They're like licking this thing to figure out what it's made of, but they're not checking the box before they put her back
in the
sea. She
wouldn't let it go. She wouldn't let anybody touch it.
Well, so, but they could get her back in the thing and be like, all right.
They're like, here you go, later, lady. Thanks for visiting. Now, they did this not because they were afraid of her, but it's because they didn't want the hassle. One translation puts it like this. If information about this incident is relayed to the Lord of the Territory, we may be ordered to inspect this woman and the boat, which would be a costly endeavor. Since there is a precedent that this kind of boat should be cast back out to sea, we had better put her inside the boat and send it away. From a humanitarian viewpoint, this treatment is too cruel for her. However, this treatment would be her destiny.
Her destiny.
So they're like, yeah, this seems kind of crappy, but you know what? Obviously,
it's destiny.
It's destiny. Yeah. Yeah.
It's like really cost to like inspect her and just figure out what's going on. They couldn't just be like, oh, I mean, it sounds like they were already looking at what it was anyways.
Well, there would have been paperwork, I think, is the problem.
Okay. Well, you know, I'm on board for that. Yeah. I can understand that. I got to fill out some sort of forms or.
Right.
I got to do an Excel spreadsheet. I'm out.
It's like, you know, when you shoot a protester, it's easier just to pretend it didn't happen because otherwise you have paperwork.
You got paperwork. That's pretty dark shade. Wouldn't have gone there, but you know.
The Toen Shosetsu account ends with an interesting aside. The author notes that his father once read accounts of Japanese travelers in Russia who had seen women using white hair powder, which may explain the women's strange hair.
I mean, it sounds pretty cool. Sounds like super, like, you know, rave style red hair with white tips. That sounds amazing.
And by the way, utsurobune literally means hollow boat or empty vessel in Japanese.
Oh, utsurobuno. She's head. No, I'm sorry.
It does float. Now, this story doesn't just appear in one book. It shows up in at least three major Edo period sources, written decades after the alleged event, each with slightly different details. In 1835, it appears in Hyoru Kishu, Diaries and Stories of Castaways by an unknown author. In 1844, it appears in Ume no Chiri, Dust of the Plum.
Dust of the Plum.
Or in some translations, Dust of the Apricot, written by Nagahashi Matajiro.
I wonder if the Stories of Castaway has Tom Hanks in it.
Was
just curious.
Maybe inside the box was a volleyball.
Tom Hanks. Oh, that's what it,
it
was.
It was Wilson.
It was Wilson. Wilson.
Ume no Chiri still places the incident in 1803, but changes the date to March 24th and the location to a place called Harato no Hama. In this version, the vessel is described as black-coated with four small windows, iron plating on the bottom, and a shape resembling a rice pot. It also includes oddly specific details. The woman is said to be 20 years old and 1.5 meters tall.
Sounds like they did some inspecting.
Exactly. So. Inside the vessel, alongside the food, is a beautifully decorated cup with ornaments no one recognizes inside. So what was this thing? An alien craft? A crashed USO from the depths? An exiled princess doomed to drift the seas? Let's talk about it.
All right, let's talk about it.
After this break. Welcome back. I'm here with Jason, and we're discussing the mystery of the Utsurobune. Honestly, this is just an excuse for me to talk about Japan. And show off my Japanese pronunciation, which could also be terrible.
Depends on who you're talking to.
Yeah. Is it actually somebody who is from Japan, or is it other people who are very impressed with my Japanese?
I'm so impressed, Shay.
See, that's the great thing is anytime Jody's, I'm doing one of these stories and saying my Japanese with Jody, she's just very impressed. And I was like, she doesn't know any better. It's great. Yeah.
I've been on these trips with you, so I know better. Although you do good. You do really good there.
I do pretty good, except for...
The Japanese people laugh at you a lot, which I find... And then I laugh at them laughing at you, and that's always fun.
It was the coffee shop.
Oh, the coffee
where
shop.
Where I was like, "Kono wa kawaii kohi ya desu ne?" And he's like, "Kawaii?" I was like, "Oh crap!"
Because my coffee shop's really scary. I thought it was nice and warm and inviting. Why are you in here if it's so scary?
I was trying to say your coffee shop is cute, which is kawaii. Scary is kawaii. So pronunciation matters. I love how I couldn't even pronounce pronunciation. Pronunciation matters. All right. So before we get back into the story, Jason, where should we go next on our next Japan adventure?
Oh, I don't know. That's a good question.
Road trip?
So I think it's another road trip. Yeah. Road trip. For anybody that's out there listening, if you've been to Japan once, next time you go, seriously consider renting a car and seeing the countryside, because that changes the vibe immensely.
It gives you more freedom too, so you don't have to be, you know, attached to train schedules.
The amount of monkeys that we saw on that trip versus the previous one was about, you know, 10 times more.
I didn't see a single monkey on our last trip, so.
I saw, the previous trip, zero monkeys. This trip, at least 10.
But still no crappy Barbaras, but we have to go to a cafe for that.
We got crappy Barbaras in
America. Crappy Barbaras, yeah. All right, back to the mystery.
All right, back to the mystery.
We now know that at least three major texts describe the Utsurobune. References to similar hollow boat stories appear in 9 or more additional Edo period sources.
Hang on a second. Are these major texts? Like Tales from the Rabbit Garden is a major text at that point in time? Is it like the New York Times of...
Let's say yes, because I don't know.
Fair enough. All right. We're going to go yes on that answer.
I mean, would you call the Inquirer a major major text of the United States? There you go.
It's, you know, World Weekly News.
It's the world.
Come on.
And unsurprisingly, outlets like Ancient Aliens argue
Sukulos.
That this repetition adds credibility. And look, I'll admit it. The illustrations in Ume no Chiri absolutely look like flying saucers. Here, I'm going to pull one up real quick and I'll show you.
All right. Let's see.
With the magic of editing, no time will have passed.
That's right. Thrilling.
Looks like a flying saucer, right?
Yeah, that actually way more saucer-like than what you originally described. I kind of expected it to be a lot more rotund, for lack of a better word.
Well, there's another image, and I'll put all these in the show notes. See how it looks kind of like a rice bowl or a rice cooking pot?
Oh, yeah. I can see that. Okay.
And then there's one more that... Let's see if it's on the wiki. Yeah, here. And then this is another one.
Oh, that's kind of what I was expecting.
Yeah, like a helmet.
A lot more.
A helmet
rotund.
On a bowl.
Yeah, exactly. I'm looking up World Weekly News. It's the world's only reliable news.
Oh,
according
to
their tagline.
Then that's a major text, yes.
Yeah, okay. So major text.
All right. So the illustrations, like I showed you in Ume no Chiri, absolutely look like flying saucers. But let's slow down. First, historical context. In 1803, Japan was operating under Sakoku, the Tokugawa shogunate's isolation policy that restricted foreign contact from about 1603 to 1868.
That's a little bit of time. Also, Shay, if we slow down, we're going to lose listeners. We got to keep it rolling.
And then most common people were forbidden from leaving Japan. Foreigners coming into the country were heavily restricted. Trade was limited primarily to China, Korea, and a small Dutch presence in Nagasaki.
The Dutch.
Your average fisherman in Hitachi province may never have seen a non-Japanese person in their entire life.
So did they describe this person as non-Japanese, or did they just describe him as like super pale with red hair?
Pale pinkish skin. Yeah, not like Japanese.
Okay.
And then the red hair.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. European clothing would look kind of alien to them. Red hair would be shocking. And a language you've never heard would sound supernatural. So, yes, someone like this would seem otherworldly. Now, let's talk about the boat. It's made of lacquered wood, iron plates, and resin-sealed windows. Do we really think this thing traveled through space?
Probably not through space.
Probably not. Or survived deep ocean pressure.
Yeah, probably also not surviving deep ocean pressure.
And think about this. Round boats were not unusual in Asia. Vietnam has basket boats. Japan has taribune, or tub boats made from barrels or tubs.
Yeah, I was going to say that's just somebody's tub who got, carried out to sea.
Early versions of the story may even describe a simple dugout, which is a hollowed out tree made into a boat.
Yeah, but trees are not normally round, so that seems kind of odd.
Stories evolve.
Okay, fair enough.
Not as exciting when a foreigner arrives.
Unless it's very small, you know, you go widthwise across the street.
Right, there you go. Yeah, I mean, foreigners arriving in a dugout, which is a boat that was known to a lot of people at the time.
Sure.
Is not as exotic as somebody arriving in a round boat with a lid.
True. Yeah, you gotta juice the story a little bit to get the subscription numbers up.
That's right. You gotta get that clickbait going on.
Your rabbit garden weekly.
And crucially, the boat never flies. It doesn't even move under its own power. They rowed out and towed it in.
Does it even like power on the water on its own power?
No.
Or is it just kind of hang out and
it just kind of floats
with the tides? Okay.
Historians have looked at this story for a long time. And even as early as 1844, scholars were already questioning its authenticity. In 1925, folklorist Yanagida Kunido examined a similar hollow boat story and concluded that Utsurobune fits a broader tradition of arrival folklore. And stories explaining the origins of families or regions through mysterious outsiders. So basically, you have an area where somebody will say, well, back in the day, a young Chinese woman arrived in an Utsurobune, and she had, and the stories go, she had had an affair, and she was a princess. She had had an affair, and so she was exiled. And so she came here, and eventually she became a princess here and started our family line. Therefore, our family has been here since before your family.
In his royalty, strangely exactly. enough. Imagine that.
Exactly. He concluded the story was fiction built from common narrative motives. Physicist and historian.
A little bit of a difference on those two.
Physicist and historian Kazu Tanaka went further. He tried to locate the beaches mentioned in the text. They don't exist on Tokugawa era maps. And here's the thing. In the Tokugawa era, they were meticulous about records.
Oh, yeah. They had lots of records.
They recorded everything. That's how you get those taxes.
You got to have the records.
They had seriously detailed maps at the time. So for two beaches to not be mentioned on any maps or in any records, you know, sure, maybe something is missing once the Meiji Restoration period came about. A lot of things may have been lost while they were purging.
I mean, you know, maybe it was good surf and it was locals only. They just kept them off the map on purpose.
He also researched the name rulers. One never governed Hitachi.
Oh.
And the other only governed landlocked territory. He never had territory on the beach. So,
as far as you know.
True. Again, records. But again, Tokugawa era shogunate was incredibly detailed and meticulous about their records.
That is correct. Yes. Very true.
So it's given how meticulous Edo period records were, it's unlikely that an event this extraordinary would leave no official documentation. So no documentation in any of the official records of this story happening. Add to that the Edo period's love of strange stories. This is the area that gave us many of our favorite famous yokai legends. And the Utsurobune begins to look less like evidence of aliens and more like a really good story.
More like evidence of great imagination.
And at this time, too, because of this isolationist policy of Japan, Europeans and Westerners were both a source of fear for a lot of Japanese commoners, also a source of intense curiosity.
Sure, that makes sense.
Kind of like how we are with just aliens, fear and curiosity all wrapped up in one. So these legends would come about because built out of this fear and curiosity.
Sure, that makes sense.
So,
I mean, there's tons of legends throughout time of things being floated and down river, downstream, or in oceans and being found. I mean, Moses in his little basket floating down the stream, you know. Maybe Moses was an alien. Or Japanese. What if Moses was Japanese? That'd be very interesting.
What if Jesus wasn't white, Jason?
Oh, I hate to break it to you, Shay. I hate to break this to you. Hate to break it to our listeners. Probably wasn't white.
Probably brown. Keep Jesus brown.
That's right.
So was it Utsurobune a close encounter of the third kind? No, almost certainly not.
Well, there was three writings, so the third one was in close encounter of the third kind. You know, but you got to be pretty close to, you know, cheat on your significant other as well. So,
but it was a close encounter with the unknown, with fear, curiosity, foreignness, and imagination all colliding on a quiet beach in 1803. The hollow boat doesn't prove aliens visited Japan. It proves something far more reliable, that humans tell stories when they don't understand what they're seeing. And these stories evolve, and that when something truly inconvenient washes ashore, sometimes the easiest solution is to push it back out to sea and let destiny deal with it. And of course, we didn't do that. We wrote it down, argued about it for 200 years, and turned it into a mystery that refuses to sink. Bom, bom, bom.
Awesome.
All right, that's the legend of the Utsurobune, a probably not
Probably. So did they ever find like existence of these particular boats anywhere? Were they ever found?
Not one specifically like that. It's because of the cover, like the lid. Like,
oh, really?
Like a pot with a lid that they didn't. But there's many, like I had mentioned in the story, there's many examples of round boats in Asian culture.
Okay.
So I don't know if you've ever seen the Vietnam basket boats.
Yeah, I've seen those. Yeah.
They're super baskety.
Yeah,
super
they are.
Round. And even the Japanese tub boat, you know, it looks like a tub.
Yeah.
It's a big round tub. But, it, you know, I don't think it's...
I wonder if there's just like a boat builder ahead of its time and somebody decided to
exactly.
like jack his stuff and take off with it and got stuck.
Now, this Utsuro-bune legend, generally when you look it up, it refers to the Tales from the Rabbit Garden text from 1803. Well, the story is 1803. That was written in 1825. And then the two other texts that were written in what, 1835 and 1844. But what the scholar who really dug into it in the 1920s, he said that these type of stories were throughout Japanese folklore and history. So this is just the one that kind of gained popularity. You know, it's like Roswell.
Sure, sure.
Which was not the first big UFO encounter.
What was
in
the first
40s.
Big UFO
encounter? That would be the Maury Island incident, and Roswell Ooh. Can suck it.
Ooh.
Fighting words.
Fighting words. Maury Island, that's up here in the Northwest.
That would be up here in the Northwest, right off of Tacoma.
Yep, not that far away from where we are currently
exactly.
sitting.
Exactly. Exactly. But, you know, kind of like that. Like, that's the big legend encounter that people bring up most commonly when they talk about the UFO legend in, you know.
In Japan.
Not in Japan.
Oh, not in Japan.
I'm talking about the Roswell being the common thing that we bring up.
Yeah, we talk about Roswell as the common one, but there's evidence before that of strange happenings.
Right. But so for Japan, the Utsuro-bune... When you say the Utsuro-bune legend, it's or Utsuro-fune is actually what the hollow boat should be. Like, it's fune or bune. That one, fu and bu can come from the same character in Japanese with different meanings, but sometimes they're interchangeably used.
Gotcha.
But those legends had been going on for centuries of just weird round boats or weird people showing up in boats or weird boats showing up. Or people making weird boats. I don't know. It's the Japanese. They have a great imagination.
They do.
They're
do.
Very imaginative.
They're not not hesitant to embrace the weird at all. So
yeah, if you've looked into any of their yokai legends, like the one where the yokai who his whole thing is his butthole is an eyeball.
Embracing the weird, you know.
You know, I don't think any of us Westerners would have been brave enough.
Is that where the song Brown Eyed Girl? Oh, wait a minute. That's not right.
Brown Eyed Yokai?
Yeah, Brown Eyed Yokai. There's the Brown Eyed Yokai.
So anyways, all right. Well, thank you, listeners, for letting me talk about Japan again. Jason, thank you for letting me talk about Japan again.
Like I'm going to be able to stop you.
Exactly. Just try and stop me. All right. Well, a happy summer of saucers, and we will see you next time.
Next time. See you down the rabbit hole.
You've been listening to Rainy Day Rabbit Holes. We thought maybe you had forgotten. How could you forget? We are your hosts, Shay
and Jody.
And you can find all things on our website, rainydayrabbitholes.com, like sources, notes, pictures, links, whatnot. That beautiful website is designed and managed by the amazing and talented Letha Davis at easybreezy.com. That's easybreezy, EASYBRZY.com. All episodes are edited and produced by me, Shay, and you can reach out with any questions or comments at shay@rainydayrabbitholes.com. That's SHEA. Thanks for listening. Please share the podcast with your friends and family and stay curious.
See you down the rabbit hole.
Hi, I'm Mojiella Wodeyal from the Feminist Buzzkills Live Pod, the only podcast that helps you navigate the news in this post-pro anti-abortion hellscape. Each week with co-host Liz Winstead, we dissect all the news from that sketchy intersection of abortion and misogyny with providers and activists working on the ground. The cherry on top is we have amazing comedy guests who help us laugh through the rage. Feminist Buzzkills Live drops Fridays wherever you pod. Listen and subscribe, because when BS is popping, we pop off.